Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and our good friend Joan Pride. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Joan, before we get into the letter, I want to repeat something I said in the opening segment about CIT.
Okay.
You've been following that a little bit in the news. They're about to go bankrupt, apparently.
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
Ironically, only a week or so ago, before I even knew that they were in that kind of trouble, I was talking about them being one of the biggest SBA lenders.
Oh, gosh.
They've gotten awards. CIT has gotten awards from the government for being such a robust and faithful lender to help small business owners get government guaranteed loans, SBA guaranteed loans.
Okay.
So they have been really a great force in the U.S. across the country to help small business owners, but not only SBA loans, which are more term loans, meaning you make a loan and you make payments over time.
Right.
But they've also been a cash flow resource.
Yeah, I heard you mention factoring in the previous segment.
And
that's huge.
You know what?
Especially in times of economic difficulty.
Exactly. But see, in factoring, folks, is where you get an order and you can literally get your cash from CIT, for example, if you have a factoring relationship with them. You can get your cash from them today. And not have to wait for the customer to pay you. If you're that tight on cash flow, factoring is a good way to do it. We've talked about it on the show many times.
You basically take
with
over your receivables.
That's exactly right. And you wind up getting 96 cents on the dollar for what you get. You pay them 4%. And it's expensive capital, but if that's what you got to have,
you got to
have
it. You need it.
So they're doing a lot of that. But also they are the accounts receivable department for a lot of bigger companies that aren't in trouble. So if they're going bankrupt, Joan, then whenever a company goes bankrupt, whatever receivables, whatever assets they have of yours, you don't get those back.
Right.
So not only could this be the ending of a source of capital for small businesses who may want to do business with them, but it could be the end of a company that I don't know whether they're going to go Chapter 11 or 7, but regardless, it's going to be a new company.
Right.
That's what happens. You go to NewCo, and former receivables. I don't know who's going to administer the loans, the SBA loans. This is going to be, if CIT goes bankrupt, this is going to be, I fear it's going to be a nightmare for a lot of small businesses.
This
potentially could be put some small businesses out of business.
Wow.
And so, anyway, it'd be tantamount to a bank collapsing and not having any kind of FDIC. I just couldn't get that out. Thank you. I kept wanting to say
that's why I'm here.
I kept wanting to say SIPC or whatever the other one is. Anyway, so folks, that's on the news right now, Joan, and I just wanted to say that it'll be interesting, Joan, to see how the government responds to something, to an organization that's so important to small business.
Sure.
When they've responded so quickly to organizations that were a big deal for big business.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be watching that, Joan.
Okay.
Let's move over and talk about the letter. The question that Kiplinger posed this week, will U.S. manufacturing ever come back? What's the answer, Joan?
Well, kind of.
Kind of?
we kind of divide the answer into two. We say output will come back, but many jobs, as you can imagine, many of the jobs are gone for good.
Yeah. Well, and the reason they're gone for good is because those companies, that have closed, a lot of the people who lost their job because the company closed up.
Right, exactly.
And
a lot of jobs going overseas.
That's a lot of that too, yeah. But you know, the interesting thing, Joan, our demographic expert, Ken Grumbach, was just on the show in the last hour. Mm-hmm. And he was pointing out that China has got such a demographic nightmare in its future that he says they're going to have a problem producing a lot of the stuff that we think they're going to have. Really? Not just in sheer bodies, but the organization. Do you know that they prevented, in the last 30 years, they prevented 400 million live births?
Oh, I believe it.
That's in their one-child policy?
They were, well, and not just one child. I mean, they want boys over there.
That's what they've got. Yeah. Can you imagine hundreds of millions of grumpy 21-year-old boys? You know? I mean, anyway.
Well, and more seriously, looking for wives to have families.
Exactly.
With,
that's exactly. And that was another point he made.
Yeah.
He said the family structure in China has been decimated by this control over, and he called it cutting a hole in your demographics.
Yeah.
Think about that. That's an interesting way to think about that. So anyway, my point is, that's going to have, I think that demographic thing in China could have an impact on U.S. manufacturing in time, not tomorrow or a year and a half from now, but in time over the next 10 years or so. So that's one thing that to bring into the story. 2 million jobs, Joan, were lost since in the last 18 months. 2 million of those jobs, I should say. Only about one third is gonna come back.
Two-thirds.
I'm sorry, 2/3 in the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
that's a lot of folks.
It is
that are going to have to retool and go somewhere else, aren't they?
That's right. Exactly.
What are they going to do, Joan?
Well.
They're going to become writers?
Do a lot of, pardon me?
They're going to become Kiplinger editors, you think?
I don't know. I didn't see that in this lead, so I'm not sure.
So what are they going to do, Joan? I mean, we still got the people.
I don't know.
We have experience in this, though, Joan. If you remember, you and I talked about the jobless recovery of 2003 and 2004.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And we talked about the fact that people were going to have to get re-educated, retooled.
Right. Right.
And it's going to be an interesting, I think the next few years is going to be more interesting in terms of reorienting, resetting our workforce than any other time in our history. The last one, 2003 and 2004, were pretty interesting. This one's going to be, I think, even more interesting. 20 after the hour, right back with Joan Pride. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how do we getting back into some kind of recovery out of this recession. How long is that going to take? When's the recession going to end? We'll do that and other topics after these messages. Stay with us. That's Grace Slick bringing us back. Little Jefferson Starship. Or is that Jefferson Airplane? Which one is that? Joan, you remember?
Boy.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, my music expert and critic. Senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. By the way, folks, my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out. Thank you for doing that and using it to your advantage. We got lots of stuff there. You got 5 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. We got something you can read or listen to. You can ask a question. You can check out my blog. You can subscribe to my newsletter. You can check out our Brain Trust members on and on. Lots of stuff. And, of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride, as I said, is with us. She's our good friend and our guest senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things you guys point out down there on the bottom of page one is manufacturing is actually, you predict that it's going to kind of hold steady. And at about 13% of GDP, that's good news, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The dollar's probably helping that a little bit. But let me tell you something, Joan, that I think is going to be good for manufacturing, at least in the near term. Inventories, the recent surveys that I cover on the show with the people who poll them, for example, the NFIB, Bill Dunkelberg with the NFIB, mm-hmm. We did this yesterday. Inventories continue to be slashed.
Really?
Small business inventories are down significantly.
Wow.
Now, Joan, regardless of whether how long, if the recovery takes another 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years, at some point in time, people got to order stuff. If they're still in business, they can't cut their inventory all the way, you know, down to nothing.
Right.
So even in a slow recovery, people are going to have to start buying. I mean, the pent-up, I guess I should call it the pent-up demand factor, shouldn't I?
Because I think so.
I mean, don't you think between consumers, the pent-up demand of consumers, the pent-up demand to replenish inventories, and then maybe just the hope of a recovery, that I think all of that's going to perhaps create a little surge in manufacturing. What do you think?
Well, it could.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's kind of my story on the inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, the up in your economic forecast box, handy dandy little box up here, you guys point out the GDP is kind of going to be going sideways.
Yes. Leveling out. And
yeah.
Then we say rising slowly later this year, which would be a very good development.
Isn't it interesting the two ways that you have to look at a period like this? We have the technical recession, right, Joan, where we continue to have quarter after quarter of negative GDP. Now, Bill Dunkelberg says he thinks third quarter 2009 will be positive. And from his mouth to God's ears, right?
Yeah.
But we've got that technical thing. But even if the third quarter and the fourth quarter become positive, it won't be enough to overcome the first half negative. But never mind the technical part, Joan. It's still for some quarters to come.
Right.
It's still we're gonna feel like we're in a recession, aren't we?
Exactly.
And so much of the marketplace is emotional, isn't it, Joan?
Absolutely. We've seen that.
The stock market, consumers,
mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what's going to be a big indicator, a big factor in that. I think is I read something in the journal this week. Mort Zuckerman, who's Mort Zucker,
mm-hmm.
is the guy who owns U.S. News and World Report and is a pretty significant commercial real estate guy. He says we may have counting people who are now part time or underemployed, that we may have 20 million people in America who are either unemployed or underemployed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that underemployed part is important.
Yeah.
I think it's often overlooked.
And so he was talking about, you know, if you've got that many people who are under or not employed, that means everybody knows one or two of those people.
Yeah.
And as long as we've got that kind of those kinds of relationship, I think that's gonna put a damper on the comeback of the consumer. What do you think?
I think that may be true. Yeah.
And the credit situation, inflation though, that's good news. Another thing that Dunkelberg supports your position here on inflation, Joan, is that prices have, you know, there is no pricing power out there for small businesses anymore. Maybe, and probably not for anybody. Discounts are the corner of the realm right now.
Right.
And so that's, and payroll is down significantly, Joan. The overall payroll in America is down significantly.
Yes.
Naturally, obviously. Mm-hmm. So that's holding inflation down. So at least the good news, Joan, is your big boogeyman that you always worry about is probably not going to have a problem with that.
You sure?
Well, what do you think?
Okay. Well, I don't know.
I mean, right now, at least, we tell them we're talking about.
Well, I think we're talking about stagflation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where you have stagnant economy and inflation.
Yeah.
So now we don't have that now. Inflation, at least for the time being.
Sure don't.
I think it may be in the future, but for the time being, it's not so bad.
Well, and I think it's helped that oil prices have not skyrocketed again.
They're down below 60 again, I think.
Right.
So that's a good thing. And so maybe there's some fundamentals, Joan, that are happening in the marketplace that are going to help us, you know, ride through this thing. Maybe there's some celestial powers that think we've been through enough here. I hope that's the case. 29 after, we're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Eric, one of Joan's big guys, to take us out.
That's all I've ever said. Baby, if you please. Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you, as always. And Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I think we lost her for a minute there. We're going to get her back. But in the meantime, one of the things that that Kiplinger talks about in the letter is this week is banks. Banks continue to have a tough time dealing with the fealty that they've had to make to the bank, to the government, I should say, when they're trying to bail out the banks. They've had to deal with the oversight, having the government's boot on their neck. And so what do? As quick as they can, these banks that have borrowed money from the government, they're paying it back as soon as possible. Joan is back. Joan Pride, welcome back. And Joan, we're talking about the leash that you guys say that banks have, and looks like we lost her again. Must be some kind of phone problem. One of the things that's happening here is that folks, and you need to prepare for this in your small business, is the FDIC and I guess the Fed too. I'm really not sure. Be honest with you, I'm really not sure who's going to be completely in charge of your bank in the future. There's going to be the continued FDIC regulators, the federal regulators, the state bank regulators. They have all of that. There's also going to be probably a consumer credit audit that the banks will have. And there's going to be tension between those two. There's going to be, the banks are going to be trying to take care of their deposits and their investors and their customers. And then there's going to be another group that's going to be trying to make sure that they're good to consumers, and I'm not sure that those two things can actually coexist in a world that really works. And so prepare yourself for your bank to have more restrictions. One of the things you and I've talked about over the years is making sure that you have available for your banker whatever information they need. They're going to need, they've always needed your tax returns, your financial statements, your business plan. And over the years, if you've had some of those things, if you've had most of those things, you know, basically you just had to dot an I and cross a T, fill in the squares. But I'm afraid in this new, highly regulated, increasingly regulated environment with banks, I'm afraid there's going to be more requirement on you to borrow money. When you borrow money, to have to come up with a lot more documentation, and it's going to cost you more money. It's going to cost the banks more money. Their fees are probably going to go up. So all this stuff that's going on, folks, right now within the financial industry is going to hurt small businesses. There's no question in my mind that this is what's going to happen. So be prepared for that. And just get ready. Just gird your loins and be prepared, because it's going to happen. It looks like, according to Kiplinger, it looks like that Uncle Sam is, you know, they recently went up to, from the on the FDIC insurance, they went up from deposit insurance, went up from $100,000 per account to $250,000 per depositor, I should say. And they had that scheduled to end in 2013. But it looks like they've extended that. And they're temporary, and on non-interest-bearing, at least on non-interest-bearing deposits, meaning the ones who don't get interest. So that's looks like that's going to go up and going to stay up, I should say, after 2013 at $250,000. Here's another thing that's interesting that Kiplinger reports this week: specialty exchanges. Now think about that. Specialty exchanges. An exchange, a stock exchange, so like the NYSE and NASDAQ, et cetera, et cetera. These exchanges are set up. These are marketplaces that are set up to trade in shares of companies, or in units of commodities, or in investment vehicles, investment instruments of some kind. that's what these are set up for, and each one of them is a little bit different, right? NASDAQ is tech heavy. The New York Stock Exchange is you know, where the blue chips are. Well, there may be some specialty exchanges that are going to be cropping up that will buy and sell shares of companies that are a little bit less likely to be available on the NASDAQ. Could this be an opportunity to roll small businesses into this? This is something I'm going to be watching for. I've been asking for, I've been hoping would happen, where investors would help a small business and then take their company to public, and this would be another way of getting capital into small businesses. 20 till, right back after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. In the market down in New Orleans, Scott Oxley, but no, it's doing all right. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's back. She is here, folks. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. They got an outstanding website, kiplinger.com. And then they've got some outstanding publications. Of course, the Kiplinger Letter. Joan, we got, what, coming up on 26 years? I mean 86 years?
Yeah.
I think it's September, 86 years old. This is a family-owned, small business, internationally recognized financial business publication, the Kiplinger Letter, outstanding story, great American story. And that's the one that Joan and I work off of. You can find that on their website, at kiplinger.com. And then, of course, they've got other publications like the letter is weekly, but they've got biweeklies like the California Letter, the Agriculture Letter, the Biofuels Letter, and then the Tax Letter. That Tax Letter is kind of important too, isn't
it,
Joan?
It's my favorite.
And then that magazine thing.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
I need to get the California Letter. I need to know what's going on in California.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be a fascinating letter these days.
Boy, is it ever.
Would think that letter would be, the subscriptions would be going up on that.
I have no data on that, but you would think so.
I mean, my gosh. It's California, folks, is a nightmare waiting to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really, really bad out there the government. I mean, this is something. Anyway, so check all that out, folks, at kiplinger.com. And how about a phone number, John?
Sure. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
First-time home buyers, Joan, have got some good news, don't they?
Well, we think so. There's a first-time home buyer's credit of up to $8,000. And, of course, it does phase out at higher income levels, but that credit is there. Now, that credit is supposed to expire later this year, on December 1st. But we think Congress will extend that.
Yeah, I've been hearing some rumblings about that, too.
Yeah.
They're going to need to extend that, aren't they? I mean, I think they were wishful thinking when they put a 09 deadline on that.
Right.
Joan, let's move over and talk about health care. The health care reform bills that are going through Congress, it's already passed. The House version is already passed, hasn't it? By one vote.
The House?
The House.
No, they just introduced the bill.
Oh, they did? I thought that. What am I thinking about?
The Senate Health Committee passed the bill the other day.
Maybe that's what I was thinking about.
No, yesterday. I'm sorry. In the committee.
Yeah, okay.
But nothing's reached either floor yet.
Okay, all right.
And the House markups should be going on. I don't know. Maybe they'll start this week or they'll be next week. And it's called the Tri-Committee because basically the three committees with jurisdiction, House Ways and Means, House Energy and Commerce, and House, I'm blanking on the third one, I guess Education and Labor maybe, three of them all came together to produce this proposal. So that's going to be voted on by each, I guess the pertinent sections that each committee covers, like taxes being in the Ways and Means Committee, will be voted on by those committees, and then the whole thing will go to the floor.
Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting piece of legislation because it's been a long time since an administration has been as all in on anything as the Obama administration is on health care reform.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, they have pushed. When I say all in, folks, if you've ever watched the poker games, the poker tournaments, when you see the poker player put his hands down or her hands down on the table behind the chips and push them all to the table, middle of the table, That's called all in.
Yep, they're putting the president is putting it all on the line.
All in, every ounce of political capital.
Yes.
But he's got some structural impediments, Joan, doesn't he? You guys report that this week.
Well, that's the thing, and what we're saying is, you know, that at this point, things are getting a little dicey, and it looks as if, at this point, health care reform could be in trouble. But, you know, it's really too early to tell one way or the other.
Well, they want to get it done as early as possible. They clearly want to get it done in 2009.
Right.
Because that's really going to be probably their only chance is getting it done in 2009.
Right.
Because next year's an election year I hate to say that, but it is. And and so I don't like to look that far forward to elections. But not only does the healthcare reform have its debate going on between, you know, the people who want it, people who don't want it, and the people who just want it differently, one from the other. You got that natural thing going on.
Right.
But the structural problems, Joan, I'm talking about is even if, you know, in a perfect world, the Democrats would have the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. They'd have a filibuster-proof Senate. But it's not a perfect world, is it, Joan?
Well, that's true.
They've just had
factions within each party that will make things very complicated.
Well, that's it. But, Joan, I'm still talking about the other two guys. Kennedy and Byrd.
Oh, right.
See?
Right.
Work with me, John. I'm talking about the guys who can't shoot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought we were looking at the Kiplinger letter.
Well, you've got it right there. You've got it right there. I mean, look, the things that are going on, folks, the Senate theoretically have a filibuster-proof 60-senator majority because of Al Franken being seated recently.
Right.
But, Joan, one thing that Rich Galen reminded us of earlier in the week is that in the Senate, you got to show up and you got to answer to your name.
Well, in the House, too.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But
that's one thing that they still
the House
do in person in Congress is
right.
vote.
Right. But the House doesn't have a filibuster. The Senate has this.
No, but you said you still have to show up.
You're right. You're right.
Show on both houses.
You're right, as much as I hate to say that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what we got here is Senator Kennedy and Senator Byrd, they're not well. They're not well. They're sick. I'm sorry to say that, but they are. If they can't show up to vote, Joan, that's not 60. And that's a structural issue for the president in getting this passed. Because he's got to have enough Republicans to overcome that. In the Senate. So we'll see how that works, folks. This is politics is very interesting sometimes. Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. Little Jimmy bringing us back. Jimi Hendrix on guitar there and vocals. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check that out. And don't forget, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're still talking a little bit about this healthcare debate, Joan, because part of the debate on healthcare is how to pay for it.
You bet.
And that's a real problem. And tell us what the government is thinking about doing.
Well, in terms of taxation with healthcare reform, there's kind of two segments of it. One is sort of embedded in healthcare itself, which talks about penalties on employers who don't provide insurance, and penalties on individuals that don't take insurance. So there's taxes that are penalties. But then there's also the question of the cost of the bill and the need to pay, to offset those revenue losses. So there's been different proposals floating around. Now, the House is proposing a surtax on upper-income individuals. I think it starts at people making $350,000 a year and goes on up. And I think if you made $1 million a year, the surtax is very high. It's like 3 or 5%.
I heard it was more like 4.5 to 5% or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I said 3 or 5 percent. So
yeah.
Yeah. Closer to 5.
So think about that. I mean, this is and Joan, this is where a lot of the pushback is coming from a lot of people, isn't it?
I think so.
On the taxing.
Right.
I mean, so your point earlier is an excellent one about all the different kinds of debates inside of it's not just it's not enough that you just agree or disagree that there should or shouldn't be health care reform, or whether you think the government should be more involved or not, but you got to pay for it.
Right.
And then there's all the politics inside of all that.
Yeah.
And all the promises that were made about not taxing people, and how much sense does it make, Joan, to even talk about taxing people in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression?
Well, one of that part confuses me, because these taxes wouldn't start for a couple of years, so at least.
But notice I didn't say taxing. I said even talking about taxing.
I mean, you meant talking about it during a recession,
I'm
not
telling
talking
you,
about
that,
taxing them in the recession.
I know, but I'm not saying they were taxing them. I'm just saying that this kind of language, with record deficits, not knowing whether we're going to have another stimulus package or not, not knowing how, you know, what other shoes are going to drop with regard to credit card issues and commercial real estate and you know, a resetting of mortgages, more millions of those in the next few months. All that could, you know, we still got a lot of shoes out there waiting to drop. Just to talk about just the idea that we may be increasing people's taxes is, to me, I think that literally creates political problems for a lot of members of Congress.
Well, they're kind of stuck, because if you don't do any of this, then you have the problem of rising deficits, and
right,
they'll be criticized for that.
So exactly. So which brings us back to what Colin Powell and what's our buddy, the Oracle from Omaha,
Warren Buffett,
those two guys who are both Obama supporters, probably helped him get elected for sure. Both of them are saying, I'm not sure why he's doing all this year. He needs to be focusing on the economy. And I think that could be something that he could look back and say, yeah, I wanted these things done, but you know, it may not have been the best time to do it. And it'll be interesting to see how that works. Joan, moving down on page 3, I didn't know that it was legal in 29 states to fire or refuse to hire someone because of their sexual orientation. Did you know that before?
That's what we're saying, and I guess that's why Congress is acting to expand employment law.
29 states, mm-hmm, you can legally fire or refuse to hire someone for being gay. Mm-hmm. I'm not passing judgment one way or the other on that issue. I'm just saying it surprises me that you can legally do that in 29 states.
More than half the states. Yeah.
And you're saying Congress is going to work towards fixing that, aren't they?
Right. Yeah. The federal there's nothing in federal employment law regarding discrimination based on being gay, so they're going to change that.
Joan, one more quick thing. The SBA is going to be able to make loans to small business owners who are exporters who are being beaten by other companies' import laws and tariffs. If they need loans to help them overcome that, to be more competitive, they're going to be able to do that, aren't they?
Yes. That's right.
So that's one thing.
Well,
that's
they can now, but they're going to be increased.
Increasing the ability to do that.
Maximum loan allowed is going to go up to about $5 million, which is a huge increase.
That's a lot of money, yeah. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I will be too, but not today. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were made for.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.